given the power to change our world, and you chose to destroy it. Just like Sentinel, you have betrayed Cybertron and its citizens. And you betray me.
You got the touch! You got the power!
Welcome to this review of Transformers 1, the latest in the percolated media Transformers retrospective series.
Every time I look into a monitor, Prime, my circuit sizzle.
Join Garrett.
Me, Grimlock, not nice Dino.
Matt.
Unlike some of my other warriors, you never fail me.
And Jen.
Looks like we're shipmates, Squirt!
As they look at this latest movie in the Transformers series, which was released in 2024 and directed by Josh Cooley.
You're here! And you're not me!
yeah.
Awesome! I am so sorry, that must have been weird for you. I just haven't had a lot of company since they put me down here at sub-level 50.
Is this series still worth keeping up with?
Decepticons at the gates, Decepticons in the air, Decepticons inside the walls, Decepticons, Decepticons, Decepticons. If we beat them with the walls, then they're still in the air. If we shoot them out of the air, then they're still at the gates. So where does that leave us? Nowhere, that's where.
What Transformers promise did Garrett break when he got with Jen?
You've been living a lie.
I saw the truth with my own eyes. Come, I will show you.
And will Matt find it in his heart to get through yet another movie about Rock'em Sock'em robots?
You can't win, Miner. I see everything!
That's right! Except the tower we're about to crash into.
Find out the answers to these questions and more, all coming up courtesy of Percolated Media.
Cliffjumper, commence countdown! 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, let's go!
Transformers 1! Released September 20th, 2024. Budget on this was $147 million. Box office, $129.4 million. Ouch, it lost money. And this is directed by Josh Cooley. Now, before I get to the third on this podcast and we talk about that history, Matt, we've reviewed this director before years ago.
Yeah, with another franchise we did, The Old Place, that we will have to do when the new one for that comes out next year.
Yeah, we are going to do that. This is the director of Toy Story 4. Apparently, this movie was the result of a roundtable that we discussed when we did First Night. There were some ideas thrown around, and now we have a prequel to Transformers. So, Matt, they are trying to Casino Royale this. They are trying to X-Men First Class this, aren't they?
Don't you dare bring a James Bond and X-Men. that makes me weep inside. But so two things. Number one, last night, not first night. First night was something else. But I'm not surprised because I was saying for years, why are you not going back to animation? Like this property was, the genesis was in animation with cartoons. The most fondly remembered movie is the animated movie. The animated movie would be considerably cheaper than all the Michael Bay movies, especially since they kind of started to lose money with the fifth one and Bumblebee. So this made logical sense. But that does not mean I was excited for it, because I have been on record saying every time a Transformers movie comes out, I dread it because I enjoy talking with you two, with our previous host, but every time I walk into that theater, I expect the worst. Because I got that for most of the Transformers movies. This is what, the eighth movie?
Yeah.
Seventh, eighth movie, if you include the animated movie. Yeah, the anime movie, five Bay films, Bumblebee, and this. This would be number 8. It doesn't have a good batting average. Some of them are better than others, but I had no optimism going in, especially because you telling me from the director of Toy Story 4, that's not selling me because I thought it was just okay. And I really didn't feel like that justified its existence.
Yeah. Well, let's get to somebody who's a little better than okay. At least in my world. She was here when we reviewed Transformers Rise of the Beasts back in June of 2023. So this comes out.
I forgot to mention that movie. That's how memorable it was.
Yeah. I am joined by the woman in my life, my fiance, Miss Jennifer Robinette. Jennifer, how are you?
I am doing great tonight.
Yeah, Jen was here for Rise of the Beasts. We went to the theater to see that. This came out. Matt and I did have plans to review it, but me and Jen just did not get to the theater to see this. It was just one of those things where we were like, I just went to Matt, let's wait till streaming for this. So we have the director of Toy Story 4. We have a result of a roundtable. Michael Bay still gets a producing credit. Steven Spielberg still gets a producing credit. So
I noticed that. I was like, it was interesting that they got the producing credit, but it was animated.
Well, you went to the theater to see this. What was your theater like?
So I took Riker because he was the only one who wanted to see this.
I went with you.
I mean, look, he's like the perfect age for this, especially because the trailers, the animation style, Transformers in general. So I guess nobody rolled out to the theater because it was pretty empty. We went probably the couple days after it opened. So I was surprised that this did not catch fire the way that most of the previous films have. Because unlike a lot of the other ones, this one got pretty good word of mouth. And that's actually why we kind of, not that we didn't want to do this because we knew we had to for completionism, but the fact that this actually got good reviews pushed me to say, all right, maybe we should review this sooner rather than later. But this thing came and went so quickly, and we had so many other projects. You know, we were knees deep in Stephen King. We couldn't find the time. And now it's on Paramount Plus, so if you have a subscription, you can watch it.
Yep. Me and Jen pulled up Amazon to watch this. One night we just pulled up and watched this, and I text you, Matt. I'm like, okay, me and Jen have finally watched it. Now, Jen, of the three of us on this podcast, you are probably the biggest fan, which is weird considering before me and you started seeing each other, I always said I would never get with a woman who's a Transformers fan, but here you are. This movie's coming out. We didn't rush to theaters to see this, but when we sat down to watch this, were you looking forward to Transformers 1?
Yes, I was. I've always been enamored with the whole theme of Transformers and the fact that there are these Autobots that are not even human that express the qualities of what we expect humans to be. Mm-hmm. And in this day and age, it's almost a relief to watch the Transformers movies, which is why I love them so much, because it's so odd that humanity comes out in beings that aren't even human. And that's part of why I love it so much.
Matt, next week I'm moving in with you.
Just so you know, you're sleeping in the garage.
Matt, you said there was good word of mouth. I didn't hear any word of mouth, so when I put this on, I wasn't expecting much. I'll go that far. Matt, were you expecting something at least better than Rise of the Beast, which you gave a pretty low score to?
I remember, I think I gave it like a 5 or maybe a 6. The thing is, I have no recollection of that movie at all. The other thing I remember was the G.I. Joe crossover. Yes. Even at the end, which I don't, it sounds like that's not going to happen now based on. No,
we'll talk about that at the end of this. Yeah, maybe.
And I was not amped up. I wanted to put on my own disguise and go see something else.
You wanted to roll out of that theater.
Yeah.
It's weird. Like, I don't even remember hearing much about this movie in prequels or anytime we went to the movie to see something else. I remember Garrett was like, okay, we have to see Transformers 1. And I was like, wait a minute, that's a thing?
First of all, that it's a terrible title. I have to put that, especially because the joke is, "Oh, I've seen that movie already." Like Garrett, if your dad was still here, he would say that I've already seen this one before.
Probably, yeah, he definitely would.
I'm surprised they didn't call this like Transformers Legacy or Transformers The Beginning. You know, some kind of thing to actually properly represent what this movie is actually intended to be. Because my question is, look, I know the Transformers because some of them have different colors. The rest of them are gray. I can't distinguish them apart. Is this canon with any other existing form of Transformers media, or is this its own thing?
This is its own thing. This was a little bit part of the comics, I remember. They did do a Transformers story like this in those comics, but we've never seen this in the animated series. I stopped watching Transformers when I became 10, 12 years old, and I didn't really keep up. So I haven't watched Transformers Prime. I haven't watched any of the shows that were on Hub or any of those channels before I sat down to watch this. So I don't know if they covered it, but I have never heard of our two big parts of the Decepticons and the Autobots being friends at one point. This was a first for me.
Really?
Yeah. I never heard of it. No. But in doing research afterwards, like I said, there has been precedent of this in non-media form. So
I mean, like, I remember when I was younger, I can't say little because I'm still little, but
Especially next to Garrett.
Yeah, right? When I was younger, my brother watching the Transformers shows, it was the cartoon, and I never really paid much attention to it. And then the Transformer movies came on, and the first one was like Shia LaBeouf and Megan Fox. That was like the first real exposure I had to Transformers, and I knew from the get-go that at one time Optimus Prime and Megatron were buddies. I knew it, and I don't know if it was an innate sense or if something was said during it, but I knew at one time that they were friends, and something happened to make them be quote-unquote frenemies, and so this movie enclosed it for me.
All I know is that when me and Matt discuss retrospectives we've done in the past, there's two that he mentions that were the most painful for him. One was Friday the 13th, and the other one was this. So,
well, Children of the Corn has now supplanted.
All right, add a third. So without any further ado, Genet's caused them even more pain. So we start off, we see that big Paramount logo. In fact, Matt, I think I counted 6 pre-film logos before this, and I think right away...
Jesus Christ, I was already getting mad.
Yeah.
I know, I was like, what the heck? There's like 18 of them.
And I went to Jenna, I'm like, yeah, Matt's seething already, and this thing hasn't even...
Especially because they dick tease me with the Hasbro Avengers, because they show Transformers, the Monopoly Man.
Yeah.
Like, his Hasbro films are like, is this going to be the next crossover where it's the Avengers of board game characters?
I get the shoe.
We cut to Cybertron as we see D-16 and Orion Pax start their day at the mines. Now, Pax, who of course would become Optimus Prime, is voiced by Chris Hemsworth, who met with Peter Cullen, who is the guy who has done all the voice work of Optimus Prime, including the cartoon leading up to this. So he respected what came before, wanted to get some pointers. Matt, how do you think Chris Hemsworth did as Orion Pax?
Well, I got to start with the real opening, which is the exposition about Cybertron itself.
Oh, yeah.
Then... I hate the first 5 minutes of this movie. Okay. Because it's the laziest way to do exposition of someone watching a movie all about the history. It's the fucking Jedi archives. Like Cybertron might as well be Coruscant. And the humor in the first 5 minutes of him escaping feels really kiddified. And, look, not juvenile to the level of the Michael Bay films. I mean, there's nothing like that, but I was kind of squirming in my seat for the first 5-10 minutes. As far as Chris Hemsworth, that was one of the things I hated about this movie on principle, was the voice cast. Top to bottom, I'm like, you're just going for names. You're not going for people who are actually trained voice actors, you know, because there is a difference between voice acting and getting people to just lend their voice. Those are two different things.
Well, do you know what Cooley was going for?
No, I didn't.
He was going for Transformers 86, where you had Orson Welles show up out of nowhere as this big voice.
But the thing about Orson Welles, he has had one of the most distinguished voices ever.
He did, but what I'm saying is he was going for the big cast feel that movie had at that time, because you had Judd Nelson roaming around there. You had a whole bunch of different...
Yeah, that's fair, but I think this movie didn't need it, because I feel like they did that to sell the movie. Not that it worked, because look at the returns. I can hear Chris Hemsworth in moments. I wasn't thinking of Thor until the humor really started to ramp up. I think for most of this movie, I can divorce myself from him, but I think he does pretty good work. I'll give it to him.
Well, you and I had a discussion throughout the movie trying to figure out who was who, and it wasn't until we saw the credits that we settled our argument on which voice belonged to which character. So the fact that you have these well-known actors being paid for their voices and you don't know who's who, I think I side with Matt on this, in that they cast these people just to have their names on the credits. And it didn't lend anything extra to the voices or to the characters.
See, I'm the exact opposite of you two. Despite the buses you guys are throwing me in front of in this podcast, I'll say, you know, when Lawrence Fishburne shows up later, for example, I liked his presence. I liked the voices contained here. And John Hamm is great as Sentinel. I like the voice cast, so I'm kind of on the opposite.
Well, I think I ate a big bowl of crow for this movie. I thought the voice acting was pretty damn good. I think there's one person here who's exceptional. I got past the thing of big names. I didn't want this to be Brad Pitt doing Sinbad.
Yeah.
Where he's not giving a performance, he's just lending. He's just saying the lines. Mm-hmm.
So Pax is messing with controls and finding out about the past, including Primes and Cybertron, as Matt pointed out earlier. But Pax has found out, and he's backed into a corner. He tries talking his way out, but we see that he can't transform, so Pax makes a run at it. Now, Matt, we're going to see this guy, or these two, I guess, or a lot of these robots, get their transforming abilities as the movie goes on. And I know you're not a fan of seeing people gain things as the movie goes on, when you already know what's going to happen.
To a degree, but I appreciate this movie is giving me the vital information that the Bay films never really did. They're actually explaining the hierarchy of Cybertron and how the robots are born with their cogs. It's basically like their hearts that allow them to live up to their potential. So I appreciate that it's actually explaining how this works. You know, they mentioned Energon, which is, look, it's just unobtainium. It's nothing new, but I appreciate it's at least explaining stuff that I've always been curious about.
I thought it was really interesting, and it lent some insight into how they became in the subsequent Michael Bay films, how Optimus Prime in the first movie, Transformers, was so adamant about protecting the humans and so adamant about the cube and so adamant about doing what was right. It makes sense that they were born with the cog, and before they even knew they had them, they were taken away from them. And then after X amount of time, they discovered that they were actually born with that ability, but it was removed from them. And then they got it back, and it made them so much more appreciative of those powers, and they were able to use it and discern when they used it to benefit the people and the other Autobots that they came into contact with.
Interesting. Matt, you bring up a good point. The animation. Now, this is not Pixar doing this movie. This is ILM Studios who did the animation to this. I think for the most part it works. I'm kind of sad that I didn't see it in 3D because I think a few elements of this film really lend itself to 3D. Matt, what do you think of the animation here?
I thought it was pretty good. There were only just a couple parts, like the big action scene in the third act. There were parts where it was hard to distinguish what was happening because the colors are, I would say, vibrant to a fault. It's kind of like sensory overload. But I appreciate the designs they went with for the characters allow me to very easily distinguish who is who.
Now, Jen, you were complimenting the animation throughout as we were sitting watching it, weren't you?
I was. I was sitting there thinking how neutral the animation was and how they kept the animation in line and in sequence with the storyline. And once he became Megatron, that's when the animation changed a little bit. So I appreciated the neutrality of the animation in the movie because I think it helped tell the story of their friendship before things went awry.
Okay, so Pax jumps off a building and even falls into one before jumping onto a transport and getting on the ground as he's saved by D-16, who is eventually going to become Megatron. Pax is talking about what he's found and asks D-16 if he actually wants to run his own path or if he wants to be stuck in mines. So, Matt, this can't be more on the nose, can it? We're on the bottom making our way up.
Yeah, they're trying to roll up instead of roll out.
Pax has big dreams of the Matrix of leadership. Of course, this is when D-16 gets the Decepticon symbol on his shoulder.
Yeah, there's a couple of things in this movie that are a little too convenient to explain certain things. That's one of them. I do like that the ultimate symbol of the Decepticons comes from hero worship, because like, this movie is very anti-establishment. It's very anti-authority. It's very anti-large government. I was not expecting this movie to be as thematically dense as it is.
I'll say this. I wasn't expecting this movie to be the way it is. I had no idea what I was expecting going in, but right off the bat, this first 10 minutes or so, it really threw me off.
I was kind of like, okay, what's going on here? Who are these characters? And it kind of threw me for a loop. I was entertained, but I was a little bit confused.
So these two swear to be friends and partners forever, no matter what. We know that's going
to
last.
Yeah, to infinity and beyond.
You know what? I thought a lot of Buzz and Woody while watching this. Actually, we meet Alita, voiced by Scarlett Johansson, as Pax and D-16, they fist bump. Now, Scarlett Johansson, again, another name I wasn't expecting. I guess Chris Hemsworth's the one who talked her into doing this. Jen, you and I were kind of going back and forth like, okay, which female character is this? We eventually narrowed it down. Jen, mm-hmm. how do you think Scarlett Johansson did in this?
I kind of think if you took that character out altogether, you could have still told the story.
Yeah, they give her some interesting pep talks and things that pump Optimus Prime up, much like Optimus Prime will do in the Bay movies and even in the cartoon. Matt, did you think Scarlett Johansson belonged here?
I wanted them to use her more because she's got a very, very recognizable voice.
Yes.
More importantly, she's given one of the best vocal performances of the last 20 years in her.
Yes.
The Spike Jonze movie. I know she understands the craft. I don't like that they don't give her character much to do beyond motivate Optimus Prime. And that's not what I want my sole female character to be exclusively there for.
Right. Now that Matt says it, it's kind of like she's there just to pump up the male characters and help give them a voice to speak. That makes sense.
Jen, have you seen her?
No.
Oh,
well, yeah. You gotta show her that.
Yeah, I'm gonna show her that before long. That's something you need to see. So this tunnel starts closing as more commotion is happening, and Pax and D-16 get out, and Alita is fired, being sent to waste management. Matt, going into this, I was not expecting a middle finger joke, I gotta say. This caught me off guard.
So the movie is a little inconsistent in that most of it is pretty age appropriate, but there is some mild cursing. Like, there's no F-bombs, but they say, like, this felt to me like the 1990 Ninja Turtles movie, where it plays for kids, sometimes too much, like with Mikey, but then it's got the heavy stuff. And I feel like this movie is spiritually very similar to that. But yeah, I was not expecting the Guardians of the Galaxy wind-up joke with the middle finger. Which, to be honest, Optimus Prime reminds me a lot of Peter Quill early on, which I don't say that is a good thing. He talks a mile a minute. He gets everyone else in trouble. He's kind of annoying.
I guess I could see that now that you mention it. D-16 is completely taken out with a punch. We catch back up with Pax and D-16 as they talk about being sick and being kickstands, and Pax thanks D-16 for being there for him. We then meet Sentinel Prime as he shows up and mentions that he hasn't found the Matrix of Leadership, which is a setback, but he gives everyone the day off because it's time for Iacon 5000, which is a race to find out who is more than meets the eye.
Yeah, it's time for Thunderdome, everybody.
Oh, dear God.
Now, Matt, is John Hamm the vocal performance you were talking about earlier?
No, but he is very good. And look, I will recognize that voice anywhere because all I hear is Don Draper. But also, one of the things is I knew where this was going because Sentinel Prime was revealed as the villain in one of those movies. Mm-hmm. So I knew that this reveal was going to happen. But I think John Hamm is perfectly cast. He can play this kind of sleazy character in his sleep. I'm just mad he hasn't gotten that big movie that I feel like he deserves, because he got one of the greatest shows of the last, you know, the Renaissance era of TV. Movie-wise, it hasn't really translated.
Mad Men is so good. And he's really good in Fargo, the season of Fargo. That
mm-hmm. He's funny. You know, he looks like a leading man.
Yeah.
He had a small role in The Town. He hasn't got that, like, Oscar bait type of role yet.
I remember when they were getting ready to cast Henry Cavill. He was in talks to be Superman at one point, too.
You know what's funny? I always said I think he could have been a really good Batman.
Really? Wow.
Or he would have been Ben Affleck's Harvey Dent. I think that would have been perfect.
That would have been interesting.
That would have been better, I think, yeah.
Jen, what'd you think of John Hamm here?
To be honest, I just kept thinking about the Progressive commercials.
So, Jen, did you see all of Mad Men? You didn't, did you?
I didn't watch all of Mad Men, but I can appreciate John Hamm for the exceptional actor that I think he is. He can play different roles. He can play a smooth, suave guy. He can play a bad guy. He can play a dad on a TV show. It just depends on how the character is written. And I like him in this role because I swear I thought that Sentinel Prime was Chris Hemsworth. Remember, we kept having this argument.
Yes.
Like, no, Optimus Prime is John Hamm, because I had the whole Mad Max thing in my brain. And it was the very end when I was like, oh, yeah, you're right. It was John Hamm. Mm-hmm. And he lends himself to the character. And I could just imagine him in the studio, like, playing Sentinel Prime and just having that hate in his voice, and I think he did a very good job with it, especially because I didn't think it was him.
So Pax wakes up D16 to ask if they can run in the Iacon 5000, because if they can beat one Transformer, it will show everyone that they're capable of so much more. But D16 is the stick in the mud who says that they're destined to be stuck in the mines. Matt, we know where D16 is going to end up, but my God, he is not a fun character to be around in this film.
He is the boo-boo to Optimus Prime's Yogi Bear. Yes. Where it's whatever you say, Yogi. Like, it's just...
Yeah.
No, he's like fucking Eeyore. Okay.
We cut to the next day, and Pax tells D16 to not be a glitch. But they get to the surface, and Pax says that he did this for them. Meanwhile, Sentinel, he gets a hero's welcome, and he gives an uplifting speech before the race starts, as he says they're about to show that the strength of Cybertron never diminishes. And D16 learns that they're not just there to watch. Matt, did you get flashes of the pod race or Phantom Menace during this race? Because I
did. My God, I got a lot of Star Wars comparison. Not just because this is a prequel. There's a lot of stuff in this movie that reminded me of the Lucas prequels.
Telling you.
Jen, did you like the race?
I liked the race, but this was the point in the movie that I started to kind of realize that D16 is a bit of a narcissist. And that's when I was like, bro, that's Megatron. That's the point in the movie where I was like, something is a foot at the Circle K on Cybertron.
I like the way some of this race looks, though. I like how the roads expand as they approach. It at least had a cool look to it. Again, it just made me wish I saw this in 3D.
Yeah, I was waiting for Hot Wheels to show up.
Yeah. I will say, though, Pax's mouth blowing in the wind bugged me because these robots don't breathe. Like, why was that?
I mean, right?
That so bugged me. I don't know why. They move into first position, but of course, they can't cross the finish line before being taken out by the winner and everybody else. This end of the race did not sit well with me.
Well, there's no way they could have won.
But it's just weird because they're all the way at the front, and then now they're not able to go.
Jen, they didn't have their packs with them. And the whole point of the race was Sentinels, whoever he wanted to win is who was going to win. And so it didn't really matter who tried the hardest. It was already said and done before it even started.
It was scripted.
Yeah, it was scripted. Project
2025. D16 and Pax are getting fixed up, and D16 is upset that Pax entered them in a race, and now they're going to get punished and demoted. But they're not either, as Sentinel loved what they did, as they inspired all around them. Then we get this Arachnid character. I guess this is Sentinel's assistant, but Darkwing has other ideas. And then we meet the future Bumblebee, played by Keegan-Michael Key. He says that he's been down here sometime between now and forever. Matt, what'd you think of the conclusion of Bumblebee here? You liked the Bumblebee movie. What'd you think of the inclusion of the character?
I thought he was, what's the right word? I was surprised they didn't have him get muted at the end of the movie. I was very surprised that they didn't check that box. And I would have been disappointed because I think he brings great energy to this role. I've always liked Keegan-Michael Key in almost everything. I think casting him as Bumblebee, because you got the guy who won't stop talking, eventually becomes a mute. Yeah, I think he's used well. I love how, I mean, we've seen this in other movies where it's like he's been kind of driven insane, so he has fake robots he's talking to just to feel like his Wilson ball.
I think between Optimus Prime and Bumblebee, they're my two favorite characters. Oddly enough, I like Megatron just because he is who he is with no apologies. But like Matt, I was expecting in this movie for his ability to talk to be taken away and his radio voice to come out, and I didn't get that. With the other movies, you understand that there was a great battle that was fought, and that's how he lost his voice, but he persevered through other means of technology, and I'm kind of disappointed that we didn't get to see that come out to play.
Well, let's mention something that I'm surprised we didn't mention at the top of this thing, but this was originally intended to be a trilogy. But given the box office receipts, guys, I don't think we're going to get that. I'm pretty sure they would have saved that for a future film.
Every fucking movie is a trilogy at this point.
Yeah. So
Fast and Furious 92.
So B tells them that they can't and won't get out, as they need to stay on the task at hand. They look at more history, and Pax determines where they are is where they can find the Matrix of Leadership. B and the other two, they draw up a plan to get out, but as they try to follow Alita, they just get bogged down yet again. They climb themselves up until they finally surface, and it's beautiful, as they say. But they're getting batted around again before they land, and Alita punches Pax in the face again. Matt, did you get flashes to the last Indiana Jones film where this chick, she's there to pretty much just motivate the lead character?
No, because I actually like this character.
Okay. I will say that.
Never mentioning that okay. Action-faced bitch on the show ever again.
I won't. Yeah, I will say I like the GoBots reference here as she rants and raves. That was great. B tries introducing himself to Alita as Badassatron, but Alita asks him to talk less. I did like this, though, when he's trying to be Assatron. That didn't make me laugh. D16 says this was a wonderful idea as they continue to walk. They start running as they see scanners approach. They find some scary greenery, which turns out to house the previous Prime. Pax notices that the Matrix of Leadership is gone. They find Alpha Trion, who is played by Lawrence Fishburne. Pax powers him up. Trion says that he failed Pax and finds out that he's surrounded by miners. It is here that we learn that Sentinel is no Prime and they have been living a lie.
This is where the movie becomes Make Cybertron Great Again. Because holy shit, is this movie a giant middle finger to Trump?
It really is.
And I couldn't stop laughing at the fact that Lawrence Fishburne is talking about the Matrix,
yes.
dot, of leadership.
Right. More exposition as we learn about Quintesson attacks, which coincidentally look like the little sentients in the Matrix. Speaking of the Matrix.
Yeah, they look like the Sentinels.
Yeah. Trion says that they were betrayed by Sentinel because he was out for the power of Cybertron, but the Matrix can only be worn by one who Primus finds worthy. So it just disappeared after Sentinel tried it on and the Quintessons took over.
I will say this movie is more representative of Arthurian legend and myth than the actual movie that involved King Arthur and Merlin.
I thought of that too. D16 says that every day of his life was a lie as Sentinel lied to them and they were completely gullible to it all.
So this is where I start to really get the Star Wars comparisons because this is a better turn to the dark side than what we saw with Anakin Skywalker.
It was faster.
And it wasn't over a woman.
You know what, Jen? I think you said that to me after the movie was over. I think you were just like, this is better than how Star Wars handled it. And you know what? As a fan of the prequels, I have been a noted defender of those movies. I will agree with you. I think his turn here is pretty well done.
Because he's kind of right. He's got the Magneto thing. His methods may be extreme, but he comes from a place of, if not sympathy, at least empathy. This is basically, you know, a commentary on like hero worship, and Sentinel's kind of the Palpatine of this, where he's the puppet master and figurehead, and much like the Jedi, the Primes are a bunch of morons who couldn't see this coming.
D16 again loses it to Pax about insisting that they break protocol by surfacing, and that Pax thinks of nothing but himself.
Which is true. So that's the one thing I don't understand in this movie. I'm like, okay, because he sacrificed himself, he's worthy? Like, I figured it would take a lot more than that. Or is it just the, well, he's nearby. It's the Green Lantern problem of, well, I'm about to die and you're right here, so here, take my ring.
Now, Jen, we're at the halfway point. You mentioned in the beginning that you were kind of confused by what was going on. Are you into it at this point?
I'm very much into it at this point. By the time they get to this little garden area, I remember thinking, okay, so we have I keep thinking about the cube. I don't know why. It's
the Matrix
Spark.
Yeah, the Allspark, the Matrix of Leadership. And so I'm sitting here thinking about all these primal beings that are stuck down here in moss and greenery. And it reminds me of the very first movie where Jonathan Witwicky went to the Arctic, and that's where they buried Megatron. It brought me back to that scene in the first movie. And so that's where it pulled me in, and I was like, okay, now we're getting into the weeds. We're getting into the real, real part of it. I also saw the animation. I paid a lot of attention to the faces of the characters at this point, and D16 was so gray-slated up until this point, and that's when I started noticing that they actually made his brows furrow a little bit more, and he started getting a little bit more angry in his face. And so quote-unquote Megatron started coming out at this point, whereas before he was kind of neutral.
Matt, we're at the halfway point. Are you into this more than you thought you'd be?
Oh, considerably. I don't think it's the best thing ever made, but I'm surprised that I'm even mildly invested.
Same here. I am pretty invested in this. So D16, he says that he wants Sentinel to suffer and die in darkness. They also learn that their cogs were removed by Sentinel before they came online. They are told that they need a spark to ignite their cogs. And they are then given the cogs. And this is another cool scene. I love seeing them get this power. And they still are not quite sure how to use it. Jen, you were into this.
I think this was one of the best parts of the movie where they got their cogs and they were kind of like baby horses when they were first born. They were so clumsy and they were bumping into stuff and it was like they were little kids again. And I thought this was a very wholesome part of the movie and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
And this is where my brain started asking questions. These are not the cogs they were born with, though. These are the ones the Primes had. So yes. They're just compatible with anybody. Like, as long as you have the operating software, you can use someone else's cog.
Mm.
Well, I think that's why they weren't able to transform fully.
Yeah, because they didn't have cogs at all. So I think that's a little convenient. It's the Power Rangers problem. As long as you have the coin or whatever, you can morph. It's like, well, he's Zordon. Well, you're here, so you're my new Primes.
So I guess if we would have got the other sequels to this prequel, we might have found out where Sentinel put all the cogs when they were first born, because it doesn't really say where they went when he took them out of them.
Yeah, my guess is he traded them with the Quintessens.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Pax is given the truth about them, and they leave Alpha Trion to escape. Trion puts up a fight before being almost taken out. Meanwhile, our heroes keep trying to use their cogs, and I did laugh when Pax notices that his head's not there. That was pretty funny. And these are some cool transformations. I did like the tribute to the 1986 film as they jump in slow motion and transform in midair. That was a pretty cool shot. Sentinel confronts a weakened Trion, who says that he will fall and be taken over by another Prime, but Sentinel has enough and finally takes him down before sending his troops to hunt down the others. D16 is obsessed with killing Sentinel, and he says that he'll never trust another leader again. They are taken out and brought before Starscream and Soundwave as B is gagged, who apparently couldn't stop talking when he was unconscious, which again was a line I loved. Now, this is, believe it or not, Steve Buscemi's second time in the Transformers series. He was in the Fifth Bay film.
Yeah, and he was technically in the other ones because the little gremlin bot is basically the Buscemi bot 5000.
Right? Totally true.
Matt, what do you think about this way of entering Soundwave and Starscream into this movie?
I had no idea that Steve Buscemi was in this, and he was the first voice. I was like, oh my god, that's fucking Steve Buscemi. And making him Starscream is kind of perfect, because the one thing I know about that character, he's got a very high voice. Like, yeah. He's like Cobra Commander. It might even be the same voice actor. So I think that was kind of appropriate, because my thing was like, okay, where did the rest of the Decepticons come from? Because I see Megatron, but I haven't seen any of the other ones. So making the Decepticons the Imperial Guard, basically, that tracks for me. Because that's always the thing. It's like, okay, yeah, Megatron, where does he get his army from? Well, he takes one that already existed.
That's exactly what I thought, too. I was, oh, there's Starscream, and that's where Megatron gets his army from, is from the leader that he squashed. And so all these other people are like scrambling, trying to figure out where they're going to go next, and they all just follow Megatron because he's the one that destroyed their former leader, so that's where they're going to go. They don't have a central place to follow. They don't have an innate feeling on where to go. They just follow whoever's the most powerful, and that's where they went. And I found it very interesting that they just, that's how they played chess. They just went with the path of least resistance.
Starscream says that he wants access to the mines, as B is impressed by how many robots in front of them have Wave in their name, which was another line I laughed at. Pax wants them to help unite Cybertron, but Starscream says that that notion is a myth. Meanwhile, D16 says that he's not pretending, as he wants to make Sentinel pay for being the fake that he is. And of course, this starts the fighting between Starscream and D16, and I love this chokehold that D16 has on him, because this will result in the high-pitched whining that Starscream would eventually have. Now, Matt, you're one who doesn't like seeing things as they develop and see things that we notice in future films. What do you think about how they're developing these characters?
So that one is just subtle enough because his voice only goes up a little bit. So if you're not really paying that much attention, you won't catch it. To me, if they did it to Bumblebee, that would have been a lot more noticeable. Especially because there's a part where someone gets branded and Bumblebee is next to him. So I thought they were both going to get punished in that scene that was going to involve Bumblebee being muted.
D16 says that he's headed off to take down Sentinel and anybody is invited to join him. This hurts Pax's feelings as they are once again attached and we're starting to see some seeds that will eventually become Optimus Prime's truck. Which I loved. More gunfights ensue as Alita gets in the action. Pax says that he feels like someone dropped a cliff on him as he wakes up and Alita tells him that she's better than him in every way except the fact that Pax has hope. His instincts tell him to break protocol for blind optimistic reasons. So Alita is the one who gets the pep talk, right, Matt? And this is one thing you didn't like.
Yeah, I was like, okay, that's why she's here and it's not great. Especially because he shouldn't need a pep talk because he's been so gung-ho for the rest of the movie.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's been the voice of reason, the voice of calm, the voice of, hey, let's do what's right because it's the right thing to do. And all of a sudden, we've got the chick that comes in and is like, no, this is how we're supposed to do it. And like I said before, if you took her completely out of, sorry, Scarlett, you're like pretty and all that stuff, but you didn't need to be in this movie. There's no reason you should have been in this movie. It could have been fabulous without you.
Pax says that they need to recruit Notions to help them as Alita makes sure that they are paying attention to him. And I'm laughing a bit here when one of the robots asks why they should follow Pax and gets hit and then just says, we shall follow you. Or when Alita tells Pax to speak louder when he tells them to roll out. And I know that made Jen really happy when she heard Optimus say roll out.
Oh my, I was freaking giddy. I was laughing and I was yelling and I was happy because that's, how do you know Transformers when Optimus Prime says roll out, right? I was like, finally, yay, he's here, Optimus.
Meanwhile, Sentinel is acting cocky as he interrogates Starscream and D16 and B. D16 gets punched for approaching Sentinel, and we hear that Sentinel killed Megatronus Prime, and when he did, he took his cog before tattooing the Decepticon symbol on him. So, Matt, here we are. We see somebody get branded.
Now he is, really is Magneto because he's been tattooed.
Yes. Pax practices transforming as he jumps, and then he shows up to the mine to talk about what he learned on the surface. And we're also being reintroduced to Jazz here. Again, we're building Optimus Prime's army as well.
Yeah, well, a couple, because like, there's no... I haven't seen Sideswipe. I don't think he's in this. I'm just trying to think of ones from the first movie, because those are the only ones I remember.
He offers them the chance to fight back using the spark that resides at their core, and that now is the time to stand up for their injustice. D16 stands up as Sentinel points a gun in his face before Alita shows up in time to save him. We have another battle breakout as Pax shows up and they crash in the tower Sentinel and D16 are in. Matt, are you liking the action here?
Yeah, I just think there's parts where it's a little hard to figure out who is punching who.
You know what? That was the big common thing in the Bay movies, right? Was it's hard to tell one from the other. And I think Bumblebee had that first 10-15 minute scene of introducing Cybertron, and they were really easy to tell there. I'll go ahead and say, I feel right back in the Bay films in that I couldn't tell who was who some of the time either.
I was able to understand who was punching who, and I don't know if it's just the way I am, but I could tell that D16 was really trying to get an upper hand, and this is the point where he was looking at the person that would become Optimus Prime, and he was feeling that defeat, and you could feel it in the punches that he was giving in these scenes. And maybe I'm just too much of a Transformers fan, but I could really feel the defeat in D16 in these scenes.
D16 has revenge on his mind as Pax approaches, and B is happy that he has a battle mask and knife hands.
I love that part.
Yeah.
That was so great. I'm nightmare!
Yeah, you were laughing pretty hard. Sentinel approaches Pax and D16 before attacking them, and Pax insists on bringing in Arachnid. B again shows off his knife hands, and we get the one-on-one between D and Sentinel, and B attacks the good guys. We hear a recording of D16 getting himself in trouble with what he says earlier, the Batman Returns trick, and it causes a rebellion.
Yeah, I hate the trope of the villain revealing themselves through a recorded message that they didn't realize was being recorded, because it's this. Monsters, Inc. did it? a fucking Pixar movie. Two Pixar movies did this because Coco does the same thing. I think this is such a cheap way to get the villain to be unmasked, so to speak, because people aren't allowed to just make judgments. They have to wait for the media to tell them it's okay, which, you know, I definitely have thoughts about.
I like this because it shows the fallacy in narcissism, where somebody that thinks they're all powerful and that nobody's going to get or understand their underhandedness, and this is a way to display that in full force, where the narcissist is like, oh shit, you done caught me. At least that's the way that I see it. It's like they think they're so sneaky, but they're not really that sneaky because they were recorded doing the bad thing, and there's no way for them to turn the corner and make it look like it wasn't what it was.
So Sentinel and D, they fight in midair before landing. D-16 once again tries shooting him before getting interrupted by Pax. Pax says that they're better than this, and he doesn't need to be like Sentinel, but D gets him out of the way before pointing a gun at Sentinel. Pax gets in the line of fire, and as he holds Pax's hand, he says that he's done saving him as his eyes glow red for the very first time. We see Pax fall. And Matt, I don't know if you remember, because I know you're trying to put the Transformers films out of your mind, but this isn't the first time we've seen Transformers Heaven, if you recall.
No, we saw Robot Heaven in the second one.
Yes, I cannot believe they brought that back for this. I cannot fucking believe it. D fights
his... If you're actually into this world and you're into the Transformers and you're a fan like I am of the entire series, this is the part where you're like, okay, well, you understand where Prime got his sense of righteousness and his sense of doing the right thing, even if it means destroying yourself. So we see Transformers Heaven or whatever it is, but if you're like a true fan, you understand that this is where the rubber meets the road and you're watching a hero be born.
I'm tired of Transformers beating me over the head with Jesus allegory.
He didn't turn no water into wine, so we're not there yet.
No, but he's got just as many followers as Jesus.
Yeah.
Well, but he hasn't turned water into wine, so I'm almost convinced. Give me some Merlot and we'll talk.
I'm pretty sure didn't Optimus Prime die on a cross in one of these movies? I mean, there's enough Christian metaphors in these that... Passion of the Prime. Yeah.
Is the AllSpark... The AllSpark is the...
Holy Grail.
Yeah.
Oh, shiitake mushrooms, really? Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that. Well, go on with your bad self.
D-16 fights his way back to Sentinel in slow motion before he takes Sentinel completely out. And I did like seeing the cannon show up on his shoulder for the first time. We haven't really seen that yet, and that's a big staple of Megatron, is this cannon. And that was kind of cool to see. I really enjoyed that, actually.
I was also not expecting a bisection where he literally rips him in half.
Yes.
I was like, wow, even for a kid's movie where you can't show blood, I'm like, that's pretty far to show that. But this is a very, like, I think Brian Tyree Henry gives the best vocal performance in this movie. I think he is fantastic, and he has been, because he did Spider-Verse. He did a voice in that. So I think everything they do with Megatron in this movie surprised me how well they pulled it off, because again, this is what I wanted from Anakin Skywalker that I never got, like a believable disillusionment with higher power, with a prophecy, because he resents that Optimus got this instead of him. I was surprised how much I empathized with this character, who I thought was just a disposable villain in the other movies, because he's there, but he loses every time.
Really? Like, you don't see the connotation between Anakin and D-16?
No, I absolutely do. But I think this pulls it off much better.
Oh, okay.
That's what I was saying, because so many of the baselines are there, like, you know, disillusionment with the Jedi / the Sentinel Prime and the, like, what he was told. The matrix of leadership is basically the Force.
You know what? Tyree was the one vocal performance I didn't get behind, weirdly. I'm not going to say I didn't like him. Maybe it was just the character himself. But D-16, he says that there will be no more false prophets and requests everybody to follow him. Pax is meanwhile given the Matrix of Leadership, which causes him to be fully formed as Optimus Prime, and D-16 is now Megatron.
This is so awesome.
You were loving this.
I freaking love this part.
Yeah, you were loving this.
I find this part amazing, and finally the animation is showing the characters for who they are, and they're fully transformative parts. It's amazing. I love this part where they were quote-unquote BFFs in the very beginning in the locker room in the mines, and now they're totally going to separate, and this is the end-all be-all. And you can still see it in Optimus Prime's face when they both become who they are, where he is forever going to miss his friend that ultimately chose the wrong path.
Yeah, well, he chose the wrong path for identifiable reasons. I think that's what makes a strong villain. But again, I feel like Optimus Prime is the weakest character in all of these movies. It doesn't help the fact that he gets his ass kicked in every movie.
He gets his ass kicked because God tells him to.
Like, it took the power of God for him to beat Megatron, literally.
It was the all spark. I mean, the Holy Grail, whatever you want to call it. Water into wine. He split the freaking Dead Sea. He rose from the dead. Mary Magdalene washed his feet. What you want to say? He's the good guy. And no matter how much he gets his ass kicked, he still wants to do right by
He still gets up and speechifies. That's all he's good at. If his fighting skills were as good as his sermons, he would be Rocky Balboa in the Transformers.
Megatron takes down Alita before B gets in on the action, and Optimus finally appears. Megatron is angry that Prime was given the Matrix, so he attacks him. Prime shoots fire at him, and they knock each other around a bit. But this is when Prime gets his axe and takes Megatron down, saying that he's betrayed Cybertron, and he's betrayed him. He tells Megatron that he's been banished and insists that he leave. Megatron says that it's not over, and him and his lackeys leave. I fucking love this final fight. Love it.
Yeah, and unlike Revenge of the Sith, it didn't take 30 goddamn minutes.
Prime starts having some flashbacks to when D-16 and him first met, saying that the line between enemy and friend wasn't as big as he thought it was.
Also, this is very much the X-Men first class of training.
I thought of that too.
And I say that in all the right ways.
Prime appoints Alita a promotion as commander, and even says that he needs B at his side, who's happy that he's going to be working for the government.
Oh my god, this part, I was like, are you freaking serious?
Cybertron forms, and Prime says everyone is given what they have the right to have, freedom, and that the Autobots will be waiting for any trouble that comes their way. As credits roll into B being excited about his knife hands, and then, Matt, did you stay around after the full credits?
Yeah, what they actually get branded as the Decepticons.
When I was watching this a second time to take notes on this, after about 10 minutes of credits, we have the Decepticons getting branded, and Megatron tells them all to rise up. We're setting up the next film as credits roll on Transformers 1.
Well, they also left a huge elephant in the room. The Quintessons are still there.
Yep.
You don't beat them. Like, they don't even fight them. It's just they beat Sentinel Prime. They think they've saved the day. I'm like, no, you got to beat the people he was working for.
Scale of 1 to 10. What do we give Transformers 1? Jen, you let it loose.
I'm going to give it a 7 because I really enjoyed the origin of the story and the fact that I got to see Megatron and Prime before they were who I fell in love with the characters to be. And it was almost like two BFFs in high school that went their separate ways, and now one's the CEO and one's the janitor. And I really appreciated the animation of the film because I don't think that you could have told this story in digital format the way that you could have told it in animation, because it brought back a feeling of childhood and the heroism that we first discovered in cartoons and animation when we were really little, and I appreciate the nostalgia of it.
All right, so 7?
Yes.
All right, 7 out of 10 from Miss Jen. Matt, what do you say, sir?
Color me surprised. Color me red, white, and yellow to match the Autobot colors, because this movie did something I didn't think was possible. They made me give a shit about Transformers. It's not to say I think this is the greatest thing in the world, but to walk into this movie arms crossed, saying, show me something, they did. For what this is, it's pretty damn good. I mean, it's got resonance. It's got more thematic text than I was expecting. I thought the voice acting was really good across the board, which was also a surprise. And I kind of think I could have used just a little bit more time in the middle, because once they get their cores, the movie kind of sprints to the end. All the broad strokes are kind of done at that point. I would have liked just a little bit more time there. Outside of that, this might be the best Transformers movie, if you ask me. It's in the top two for sure. So this is definitely one of the biggest surprises we've had in a long time. So I'm going to give this, if I grade this on the Transformers scale, this is pretty high up there. So I'm going to give it like a very, very, very strong 7 on 10.
7 on 10 from Goudreau. Yay! Well, here's what's funny about doing this show is, Matt, when we did the year-end show, we talked about Nosferatu, and I mentioned how much I anticipated that film and how much it disappointed me in the end. In watching this, a movie I had zero expectations of, kind of like the Planet of the Apes movie we reviewed last year, I came out of it after me and Jen were done watching it, and I looked at her, I said, I had a pretty good time with that. I was not expecting it. I was expecting this to drag, but the thing that's great about this, A, it's under 2 hours. Most of these Transformers films have been 2.5 hours on. I found that reassuring. I found the fact that we have a set of characters that we give a shit about, even though there are no human characters to be found, to be very reassuring. I think this director had a good handle on the material, and I think that his love for Transformers shines through. Here's the thing. I don't know if this leads into the Transformers Bayformers films. I think this leads into the Transformers Generation 1 cartoon. You turn this off, and you turned on the first episode of the Transformers cartoon, boom, you're way caught up. I thought the acting across the board was pretty good. Again, I'm not as high on Tyree Henry as Matt is, but I still enjoyed him. I thought him along with the rest of the cast was pretty enjoyable. So, same score written down as you guys. I have a 7 on 10. I really enjoyed this. Now, am I going to wait with bated breath for the next one? No. We'll talk about whether that's going to happen, but I still came out of this saying, you know what? If you stopped here, you guys are leaving on a good note, which we haven't really said with any of the other Transformers films, except for maybe Bumblebee, which me and Matt actually really enjoyed too. So 7 out of 10 from me on Transformers 1. Matt, do we get another one? Ooh. Box office receipts would say no.
Yeah, if I shake the magic 8-ball, it'd probably say my sources say no.
But we just rolled 3 sevens.
We rolled 3 sevens, but the audience did not. This movie ended up losing money. And you know what? After the end of Rise of the Beast, where they introduced the idea of bringing G.I. Joe into the fold, I think that could be something special. I think if they got those two together, we could have a really interesting film. But I don't see this continuing, even though the quality was way high standard. All right, so that does it for Transformers 1, for the Transformers retrospective. For now, if they make another one, the three of us will be on, if this woman decides to stay married to me, of course. But until next week when...
I told you you're stuck.
Until next week when we discuss, oh God, Howard the Duck. Podcasters, roll out.
Hey, whoa, buddy, you okay?
I'm great! Are you kidding me? We can transform! We transform!
Oh, wait, I know.
We're wasting time.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, exclusively here on Percolated Media.
No one leaves here unless I say so.
Come back every Friday as new retrospective reviews are posted weekly on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
Cover your receptors, Perceptor!
And if you would be so kind, please take a moment and give us a positive review and rating on your podcast platform of choice.
Believe it or not, this is the fun part.
It truly helps others find and discover our podcasts.
Me, Grimlock, love Cubs war stories.
Check out the Percolated Media archives, as we have tons of franchise reviews, including The Incredibles movies, the Planet of the Apes franchise, Star Wars, the Mad Max movies, Avatar, Pirates of the Caribbean, Indiana Jones, films of the DC Universe featuring Superman and Batman, Jurassic Park, and so many more.
are you calling inferior?
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett, Matt, Adam, and Nathan.
Oh, how it pains me to do this!
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is edited by Garrett.
Not bad for an old-timer!
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is voice narrated by Adam. This podcast is not affiliated with any film studio or network, and all opinions expressed on the Three Men and a Retrospective podcast represents the opinions of that individual. Any similarities to any and all things associated with the films in question are strictly coincidental.
This is my command. You are to destroy the Autobot Matrix of Leadership. It is the only thing that can stand in my way.
This podcast is for entertainment purposes, and all clips, music, and audio cues are used as such.
Megatron must be stopped, no matter the cost.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is a Percolated Media production. All rights reserved, and no copyright infringement is intended.
Congratulations, Autobots, we've lost them. So rest while you can.
I am joined by the woman in my life, my fiance, Miss Jennifer Robinette. Jennifer, how are you?
I am doing great tonight, and I thoroughly enjoyed this rendition simply because it took me back to...
Well, hold on. Don't get into why you liked it yet. We haven't gotten to the plot yet. We haven't gotten to the movie yet. Okay. Hold back. All right. Autobots, roll back. So, yeah, Jen was here for Rise of the Beast. Matt, how do you think Chris Hemsworth did as Orion Pax?
Well, I got to start with the real opening, which is the exposition about Cybertron itself.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's him watching the...
Well, we're getting to that. This is that comes a little later. Actually, it comes like maybe.
The opening scene is him being escaping from the archives.
Yeah, that's in a little bit, but we're just getting introductions to the character.
Are you sure? I watched this movie like 2 days ago.
Yeah, no, I'm dead serious because I just watched it yesterday too, and we're seeing them talk before he goes in and does the any.
No, you don't, because he doesn't. D16 doesn't get introduced until he helps him escape by putting him in the that like tray he's carrying, the wagon.
Don't they meet in the locker room first, and they like, hey, I'm D16.
Well, that's in a flashback.
Oh.
Okay. Matt, go ahead. Just talk about that introduction then.
I hate the first 5 minutes of this movie. Okay.
He lends himself to the character, and I could just imagine him in the studio, like, playing Sentinel Prime and just having that hate in his voice, and I think he did a very good job with it, especially because I didn't think it was him.
Yeah, Madman, we got to put that on the list too, honey, to watch.
It's on there.
Oh, that's right, it is. After Superman and Lois. So, and then we meet the future Bumblebee, played by Keegan-Michael Hall. He says that he's been down here for some time. Go ahead.
Keegan-Michael Key.
That's right. Keegan. I don't know why because I've been watching the Dead Zone. That's why I typed that. So, Matt, here we are. We see somebody get branded. Matt's off the mic, I guess, huh?
No, I'm here.
Oh, there you
now
are.
Now he really is Magneto because he's been tattooed.
You could feel it in the punches that he was giving in these scenes. And maybe I'm just too much of a Transformers fan, but I could really feel the defeat in D16 in these scenes.
Man, she's making me look stupid every which way in this podcast.
Welcome to marriage.
We hear a recording of D16 getting himself in trouble with what he says earlier. Are you okay?
Yeah, I tried to mute it to cough, but it didn't work. It didn't. Sorry.
It's okay.
I hate the scene you're about to talk about. Okay. I hate the cliche in movies.
All right, let's go. Let's go. Hold on. We hear a recording of...
I'm going to cut these guys. Watch. Come here.
You can jab them later. Gotta go.